Attention Austin guitarist, are you in need of setup or repair on your axe? Well, I have the guy for you. That's my friend Jason Swedberg over at J. Scott Luthery. You can find him at J. Scott Luthery on Facebook. Gang, I've been taking my guitars to Jason for over 20 years, and not only does he do the very best job, but he has the fastest service and the best prices in town. Find him at J. Scott Luthery on Facebook or jason.swedberg@gmail.com. Gang, whether it's acoustic or electric, Jason is your guy. Get your guitars fixed. Gang, we all know Spotify has become the ultimate app destination for music lovers. I have an account and I love it. I find new music by following Tastemaker playlists, and I make my own playlist that I share featuring music from guests that have been on the show. But did you know that aside from millions of songs, Spotify now has thousands of podcasts? All your favorites are on there, including How Did I Get Here? That's right, we are on Spotify. Just go to Spotify.com or download the app from your app store, and don't forget to follow How Did I Get Here? That's Spotify, millions of songs, now thousands of podcasts. Start listening now.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
Hello, I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys all had a good weekend, whatever it is you did this weekend. Had a good weekend, caught up with my old friend Scrappy, did some stuff here around the house, worked on a tune, worked on a couple tunes actually, tune for somebody else and a tune for myself. It's pretty nice. Worked on some podcast stuff, did some stuff. Anyway, I hope you guys are all excited about this week. Looks like there's going to be a peaceful transfer of power after all, so, you know. Out with the old, in with the new. Hopefully, this will bring good vibes and peace to America, settle this divide, and we'll get back on track, right? Hopefully, we'll get rid of this damn virus through the vaccinations, and we'll just get back on track. Hopefully, America can get back on track. That's what I have a hopeful outlook for the new year, for this new year, starting on Wednesday. Hopefully, you do too. Hopefully, all of America does. Gang, I have a great show for you today. Reggae legend Alan Mo Montserrat is my guest on the show today. He's a founding member of Austin's legendary reggae band, The Lotions. And he just put out a brand new 20-song album called Agriculture. You can see a video for the song Agriculture featuring General Smiley wherever it is that you watch videos like YouTube and stuff. But you can find him at alanmomontserrat.com. This record is fantastic. We have a really great conversation. I mean, this dude's been playing gigs. He played his first gig in 1964, all right? So he's seen a lot of stuff. He got into reggae on the ground floor, and he's here with the guy that engineered the record and plays in the band and basically like his musical partner, R.J. Johnson from Music for Life. Anyway, R.J. and Alan and I have a great conversation, mostly about Alan's history in music. I mean, he's really been around, and he's really deep into the reggae thing. And if you love reggae, you will love this album, Agriculture. You can find him at alanmomontserrat.com. You can find Agriculture wherever it is that you stream and download your jams. So please enjoy my conversation with Alan Mo Montserrat and R.J. Johnson. Let's get down.
Call your name. Jah never make a mistake.
How are you guys doing?
Pretty good. A beautiful day, huh?
Yeah, it is a beautiful day. I got the windows open and living the dream.
Yeah, there it is.
We're autographing. Mo is autographing his new CD here. We're just
very nice.
Special editions for whoever wants them.
There's got to be some people. I saw that the video has, you know, thousands of plays.
Yeah, you know, we've been pretty lucky with that. We're our own little kind of self-contained deal here, and We're not signed with a big record company, but we have some people working hard for us, and we're very lucky in that regard.
Yeah, dude, that's great. This record, Agriculture, is really, really fantastic.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, I appreciate man. It.
Thank you, Johnny.
Great job. It's a huge record in a time when it's difficult. People are putting out singles and stuff because everything moves so fast. We live on like a social media timeline that someone, I mean, I think it's awesome because I'm a person that grew up listening to records and whole records and stuff like that. So the more, the better for me. But it is, it takes some balls to put out a double record or seems like would be a double record, right?
And it will be double vinyl when the vinyl gets here, where the factory's kind of backed up at the moment. But, you know, I've never been one who kind of followed what the trends were, really. Obviously, being a white reggae musician is is kind of going against the flow. But, you know, I think the music itself is the important thing. And as long as you're not bored listening to it, and you know, those are the songs I had on hand to do, and we felt like if we're going to go to the trouble to make a record, we may as well make one that we were proud of and wanted to do.
Yeah, and it was done in your studio, RJ?
Yeah, we did it all here.
Fantastic, man. You guys had a lot of people play on the record. Fantastic people. Everyone from like Jerron Marshall to Joel Guzman, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, sure. Well, I've been here a long time, and I've known, me and RJ both have been here a long time, and of course we know and we play with a lot of different people that are really, truly talented. I'm not sure we could have done this record more than two or three different places in the country, you know, and got the level of talent that we have readily available here. So in that sense, we're really lucky to have such talented friends.
Right. And you are one of the founders of the Lotions.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that band started in 1978?
Yeah, I think that's about right. It's a little blurry, but I think that's about right.
Where'd you guys play, like the Armadillo?
Sure, yeah.
Okay. Raul's?
We played at the Armadillo. We played, Liberty Lunch a million times. Soap Creek and Club Foot. And all the bigger clubs that were around back then. Antone's even. We played out of town a whole lot. We were on the road a whole lot.
Were y'all pretty much were the first reggae band here in town?
Yeah, more or less, I think we were. We were the first one that was really successful, that's for sure. There was a band called Starmen who may have preceded us in, you know, being together by a month or two or maybe even more. I don't know, but I don't think they ever really took off the way that we did when we came out.
Where did you hear reggae for the first time?
I was playing in Hawaii on Oahu, and I lived way out in Haleiwa, which is kind of out in the country. And there was a little store across the street that sold records and papers and stuff like that. So one day I walked over there to buy something, and I saw a Bob Marley record, and he was smoking a giant spliff on the cover of the record. And then I looked at the record, and I looked at the back of it, and it said, you know, I shot the sheriff. And I said, well, that's for me.
How old were you, man?
I guess I was about 19 or 20, 21 maybe, 21. Probably in around 1973 is when I first started trying to play reggae. And I took the record home, and my whole band would come over to my house, and we had the PA hooked up to the record player. So it was huge, you know. And I lived out in the jungle, so We started playing it, and we were playing like Miles Davis and Mahavishnu Orchestra and stuff like that. And we played variety because we had to play in nightclubs. But when we heard it, we couldn't figure out how they were playing. You know, like how does it sound like that? You know,
right.
And so as musicians, we were curious, maybe even more than we liked it, but I think we were so curious about it that we decided we were going to try to learn how to play like that. And no one else around there was playing anything like that. No one ever heard of it. So we learned about, I don't know, 4 or 5 songs off the record. And we got them to where we thought they sounded okay. And we would play them in the nightclub, and people would go crazy over it. And they made us play them every set. They wanted to hear that all the time. And so when I moved back to Austin, I was in a rock band that was kind of a glam hair band thing.
What was that band?
Gypsy Eyes. And they were, you know, we were pretty popular. But when that band broke up, the other guys and I that play in the Lotions, Steve Lott and Mike McGarry and David Roach and Madra Wilson, we all got together and started playing reggae in this warehouse over off of Burleson Road. And one of the first gigs we got was at the Armadillo. And Hank Aldrich, the guy running the Armadillo, said, "What y'all's name?" And we said, "Well, we hadn't really picked one out." I said, "I got this list of names." Hold on. What is this? My phone is going crazy. It's a silver alert. Someone has discovered that I'm not there. No.
It wanted.
But anyway, Hank's, he had a list of names that we were considering, and we hadn't picked one out, you know. He said, "Well, I'm putting this down because this is, you know, it sounds all right, you know." And so after that, that was it.
He put down the Lotions?
Yeah. Yeah, it was a name that I had written down, but there was also probably 5 or 6 more at least. Good Lord.
Man, you're on the loose.
Yeah, man. Alan. They're after me now. I'm going to turn this off. But anyway, yeah, that's how that happened. And we ended up opening for a lot of big Jamaican acts all over the South and Southwest because we were actually more popular than they were. We were very popular, and people would come to see us. The kids would come to see us, and they didn't know who Peter Tosh was. They right. just knew who the Lotions were.
Right, right.
And so we had to, you know, they had Toots the same way. They had to hire us to open for them so that people would show up, and then they discovered them, and, you know, and the next time they didn't need us like that. But the first time, they all did. So that's kind of where we got our start.
It really, I remember it taking off. I mean, I remember it being a thing like with The Clash. My introduction to it.
Right, right.
It was like through The Clash, and then all of a sudden, like, a lot of like those late 70s, early 80s band adopted the rhythm for stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then you realize that, oh, the bridge of Live and Let Die is reggae or whatever. Yeah. He was trying to, you know.
Sort of.
Yeah. The Paul McCartney version of reggae.
Yeah, sort of.
Yeah.
But no, it's really true. And, you know, Clapton doing.
I Shot the Sheriff. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a terrible version next
terrible.
To Marley's version.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you know what? I mean, Bob Marley ought to kiss it. You know, he should have kissed the ground he walked on.
Yeah.
Because that really put him over the top. And once people discovered him, well, then, you know, Eric could have his own career doing his thing. But that was really cool. And, you know, other people do stuff like that. Willie, gosh, he does stuff no one does. If he finds out that one of his old friends that wrote songs back in the day is sick or something and might die or whatever, they're all old now. He'll do one of the guy's songs so the family will have money coming in.
That's amazing.
I mean, no one does that, you know? And so I got a lot of respect, you know, for people like that.
RJ, can I ask you a question, buddy?
Sure.
What's your story?
What's my story?
Yeah. Well, you run Music for Life?
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Did you used to run Mercado Caribe?
No, I used to play there a lot.
Oh, you, you did? Okay, me too.
Yeah, me too.
I have a lot of stories about that place.
You do?
Yeah.
I was in a band from Houston that played there in like 89 and 90 called Panjandrum.
Panjandrum?
Oh, yeah, and I was friends with the dudes in House in Orbit.
Sure.
Of course.
Those guys? I'm still friends with some of those guys.
Yeah. Okay, so you were in a band. What was the band that you played in?
I used to play with a Trini Dread who played steel pan named Ross Ijinga. And he was like, when I first started playing drums, it's a funny story because before that, I bought a couple drum machines, Heart of Texas Music that used to be on South Lamar. I bought an 808 and a 909 after high school, after I left the Navy for 30 days, and said, music is what I'm supposed to be doing. So I bought a couple drum machines and started making beats. And we were doing shows at the Continental Club and at Liberty Lunch.
What was the name of the band?
Well, it was just like different people I was working with.
Okay. Okay, what year was
it? I used to work with the Cooley Girls.
Uh-huh.
That would have been in the 80s.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, so as far as reggae, I mean, yeah, I discovered Sly and Raby around 1987.
Okay.
And where I was going with the beat thing was, after I was playing drum machines, making beats, then I bought some drums and started playing. So within a year, I was playing on 6th Street with Ross Ijinga. And he just basically gave me an opportunity, and I started playing those gigs at Mercado and never stopped.
It's amazing.
You played in Route 1 too, right?
Yeah, and I was the original drummer in Route 1. We started in 89.
I think I remember that band. How long were you guys around?
Well, I played with them for about 3 years, but they kept going for quite a while.
Yeah, yeah.
They still make records.
They still make music. They just don't play out very much.
Yeah, no one does.
Like all of us.
So are you the drummer on the record as well?
Yes. I did all the programming, all the engineering, and played drums as well.
So in the 90s, what did you do? After Route 1, what did you get into?
Well, I kind of wasn't really doing many gigs. I played with Urban Roots, was another band
I played with for a while. Yeah.
I played with another group called Irie Jane.
Yeah, I remember Irie Jane.
Let's see. I played with another group called 5-Ton Chicken. That's much later.
I don't know 5-Ton Chicken, but those were pretty seminal, like early 90s fucking reggae bands here in town.
Yeah, so I've always been involved in something, but you know, the other thing that went along with all this was doing radio at KAZI. I started doing radio there in high school and just never stopped.
Still has
a program.
Yeah.
That's awesome. When is your show?
I'm on every other Tuesday night from 7 to 10 p.m.
And what is it, reggae music?
Reggae Evolution, yeah.
Nice, man.
Yep.
Are there any new reggae bands coming out now that you cite, or did sort of that move to the side in lieu of like Latin music and world beat music
it's a deep well. I mean, there's new people coming up all the time.
Sure.
Chronix, Kofi, Protege, Runkus,
Earth Cry.
I mean, there's just a lot of people.
Yeah, there's a lot of great, and there's a move towards the roots reggae style, the retro style now, which is kind of what Mau Mau Chaplains play. You know,
right?
And that's a whole nother deal. But
and you guys, if Flamingo was still open, you'd be doing your residency there, right?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And when it opens up again, if that's ever possible, we're going to go back to doing it.
Yeah.
And we're still doing our live stream every Wednesday night.
When and where does that happen?
If you go to the Flamingo Cantina Facebook page on Wednesday nights at 8:30 Central Time, you can tune in and watch the show, and it's 90 minutes every Wednesday night.
So, hell yeah, baby!
Dreadneck Wednesday continues.
So, did you write these songs?
Yeah.
Yourself, Alan, or did you guys collaborate them on the writing part of it?
Well, RJ and I wrote them together.
Okay.
I wrote most of the lyrics, you know, and typically how we would, you know, approach this is maybe not as typical as some people would, but we just come in here, he'll set up a drum beat, I'll take the bass and start playing bass lines over this drum beat. Uh-huh. Finally, I'll get to something, and he goes, that.
Yeah.
Like, that's badass. Play that. So then I'll put another section, like a B section and a C section and a chorus and whatever.
Intro.
And then we'll record that track. And then I'll go and write lyrics to it. I'm a professional lyrics writer. I've had contracts with publishing companies where I'm a writer, staff writer. And so I can write lyrics, you know, anytime pretty much. And so that's kind of how we work these things. Until we have a good song, we just keep going over it until we, you know, hone it down. But that's how we started almost all these songs.
With this record, I know that there's even from the title, the agriculture and the video, and I read some about the idea coming about doing this to help educate people or help people get fed or help people
well,
eat
all that. I think growing your own food is really beneficial to you in a number of ways, you know. Obviously, the nutrition part is beneficial, but also to see how it grows and to see to understand that you don't have to be dependent on grocery stores near as much as you probably are. I mean, there's some things you're not going to be able to grow, like sugar and coffee and stuff like that. But, you know, vegetables and easy things, those are the things that bring you joy in your life, you know. I guess when I was younger, I didn't think about that much. But, you know, now that I'm getting older, it seems a very good pursuit. And then there's also the idea that songs are like seeds. And when you plant a seed in someone's mind that's a song, and they listen to it, I know you probably understand that songs that you listened to when you were younger now have a different meaning than they did back then. They evoke a different feeling or different thoughts or whatever than they did when you first heard them. And so that's agriculture in a sense, you know, like the song itself grows and matures and changes, and your perception of it does. So it's kind of a twofold concept on my part, anyway, to illustrate that.
Yeah. Yeah. So did you write within those parameters when you were writing these songs?
It just kind of developed over a period of time. And like I said, it starts with the drum beats and it starts with the bass parts. And those are the seeds. And then
a hook usually?
You know, yeah, it develops and it turns into this really cool thing, you know, that then has a life of its own.
Yeah.
You know, like different people perceive it in totally different ways and it means something different to all of them. So I think that's really cool.
I think it is very cool.
You know, so that's pretty much all I got.
Now, when did you guys record this record?
Over the last, I guess, 5 years, really. It's taken a long time because we're just doing it one little piece at a time. Whenever I could get over here and lay down a couple of things, and then we can work on this and work on that. But we took our time with it because we wanted it to be really good. There's no sense in putting out something that's not exciting and that's middle of the road, frankly. I don't see the point of it anymore. There's so much stuff comes out each and every day that's just unremarkable. And so I think in order to make any kind of dent at all, especially when you don't have a big company behind you, is it's got to be really good, you know. So we took our time.
Yeah. Did it feel weird to spend all that time working on something and when it was time to put it out, you can't even go play gigs or, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, sure. It does feel weird. I mean, I've been feeling weird all since the first of the year, months and months. I mean, our club is closed up. We can't do anything with that. All the things that we all know about that are a pain in the ass because of this. But we still get to play once a week with each other, and we're very grateful for that. And RJ and I still work in the studio, mm-hmm. and I'm very grateful for that. So in some ways, it's kind of like there's a silver lining to it as well, you know, that we're able to concentrate on these tracks and get them done. Whereas when I was playing like three or four nights a week, that's pretty hard, you know, to get up and run over here and be all creative and everything. So in a way, I mean, it's helped us to consummate this whole thing. And you know, people have been very kind to us, you know, so that's another thing.
Yeah. You've been, both of you guys, we've all been playing for a living for a while, huh? And like,
yeah.
I'd never had more than maybe 2 weeks or 3 weeks, maybe 3 weeks, but 2 weeks the most without playing a gig since 1989,
yeah.
before
right.
March and April, where I was like, yeah. wow, okay, so this is definitely the longest I've gone.
Oh, yeah, and you jones for it. I mean, now the only place I perform is in a, like on a sound stage, and there's no one there. I mean, it's like playing.
I know, it's so weird.
It's like playing in a studio where you've got to give the best performance you've ever given, and there's no audience. But lately, we've gotten much more sophisticated in our video presentation. So we've got lighting and we could turn out the lights and it's dark. And if I take my glasses off, it looks dark just like it did in the club. I could just imagine all those people out there gyrating, you know?
Yeah.
But if you turn the lights on, it's kind of tough, you know? But we're learning, and you look at yourself on TV and you know, or on the computer or whatever, and you watch the performance the day after or whatever, and you learn something every time because you're going, dude, I'm not ever moving like that again. That is the lamest looking thing I did right there. You know what I mean? And when you did it, you thought, boy, this is cool. Check this out.
Remember like in the 80s, in like the mid 80s, wasn't there a couple of clubs here in town that had like a video thing, like, and they would project you on the television, you know, you'd be on the television at the bar.
Yeah.
It was
I
like
think
a
so.
Crude sort of like, I can't.
Yeah. I do
Sixth
remember.
Street Live, was that a place?
Yeah. I do remember a few places like that. Of course you never, as a performer, you never got to see it because, no, or at least not see yourself. Because once they did it, it was over. It's kind of like, yeah, okay, you're in the other room. But really, there's nobody taping it.
Right.
I think Saxon Pub may have taped a bunch of shows back then, and they might still have those. But, you know, the bigger places, I don't think they ever did.
Huh. I guess not. RJ, do you want to tell me a little bit more about Music for Life?
Let's see. So I started Music for Life officially 2005. I was working for the state of Texas for a state agency, and one day on the first of the month, they brought me into their office and gave me a cardboard box and said, have a nice day. So that was my freedom on that day, and I started my DJ business as Music for Life DJs. That was in 2005, and I did that through the end of 2018. In 2014, I started the label officially, Music for Life, the label, you know? And so I've been growing the label since 2014 and just looking for more people to collaborate with that want to put positive energy out into the world. The company is Music for Life with the number four, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to transition and change that back to F-O-R because it's more clear, it fits my values more. I want to create music that makes people's lives better.
That's good. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and you know, reggae is a big piece of my heart, but I definitely like funk and soul too. And I used to love hip hop back in the day, so I still have a big love in my heart for the old school sounds. And I'm open to any type of thing that's positive and grooving, you know?
Yeah, man.
It's happy. It's got good vibrations, you know?
Yeah.
And we try to produce other artists, you know, like a lot of people that are just getting into the business and never had a good, you know, demo or anything going on. And so a lot of times we'll try to help these younger cats along, you know, because we've done so much of it. You know, I started recording in 1967.
Jesus, that's a year before I was born.
I started playing in nightclubs in Tokyo in 1964. I was 13 years old.
Were you playing bass?
No, I just sang. I didn't know how to play bass.
What were you singing?
Well, we sang Sam Cooke and rhythm and blues stuff, and they played The Ventures. The Ventures were huge. The band played The
Ventures. Did you meet Ventures. Chicks?
Oh, yeah. See, the deal, Johnny, you got to realize something. When I, you know, I'm like 6 foot six. So when I was 12 and 13 years old, I was over 6 feet tall. And in Japan, that made me an adult right then. And so I was this big, skinny kid, and no girls would really talk to me at school.
Right.
You know, I mean, they didn't have anything really to say to me. I see them talking to other guys, but they didn't talk to me. So I was kind of wondering when that was going to end. And so I got this gig singing. And after the first gig in Tokyo, these schoolgirls chased us to the train station. We didn't have a car. We were on the train like everybody else. So when I saw that, I went, you know, I'm never going to quit doing this.
Yeah, why would you?
Yeah, I said, this is the best thing ever.
Yeah.
And plus, we got paid real well because we were Americans. So it was really kind of cool. I mean, I went from being a kid to not being a kid real quick. And my dad kind of got me into it because he made me get on stage and sing with these guys. Yeah, the first time I ever sang on stage that wasn't in church, and they hired me on the spot.
That's so amazing.
So he just, I said, well, see, you wanted me to get up there and sing, and now I got to go play in this club, and he said, well, how much money are you going to make? And I told him how much, and he's one of these depression guys, and he just went, just be in school. When it's time to go to school, you got to be there.
Yeah.
You know, that was it. That was the end of my childhood.
RJ, aren't you thinking that what he was getting paid there, that was a lot in like 1964, is probably the same we still get paid now.
About $100 a night.
There you go.
But $100 a night back then was worth about $500 of what we got now. I had like custom-made suits in a month or two, you know. Mm-hmm. We had all this stuff.
Now, did have Mau Mau Chaplains toured like the States or anywhere?
Mau Mau Chaplains is an Austin band.
Just Austin, because yeah.
We all play in other bands, or most of us do, and like a couple of the guys play in Shiny Ribs, and you know.
Oh wait, Mark.
Mark and Tiger both play in Shiny Ribs, but they play with us. And, of course, Shiny Ribs hasn't been playing at all. until about last week or two. So, and they play here. So everybody's got a lot of time now. And then a couple of guys from Lion Heights play with us, and Micah Shalom plays with us. And so these guys got their own bands. But we all get together on Wednesday and have for over 15 years. And if people are gone, we got subs. You
right,
know?
Right. Oh, yeah, because so. Mark had like a little Texas-Cuban situation.
Oh, the sandwich deal.
Yeah.
Well, he did for a minute.
I remember that when it was there.
And he had a trailer down on South Lamar,
right,
too.
Right.
So, yeah, he's not involved in that anymore, but, yeah, he did have that. And, you know, there's all kinds of stuff going on. But Mau Mau's, our main deal is Wednesday night, and we'll play opening shows like at Flamingo for a larger artist or whatever, but, of course, can't do that right now. So,
RJ, do you play with them?
Not really on a regular. I've sat in with him here and there. But.
Yeah, he's come and sat in with us. And some of the guys that I play with in that band playing music for life. So, it's, you know, we're all tangled up together.
I remember going to these things that were on Mondays, and I can't remember when it was. I know it was the 90s. But you know Brian Sebastian?
Sure.
Remember when he did those Monday things?
I don't remember where that was.
It was at Flamingo.
Was it at Flamingo? Okay.
But I just can't remember when it was. I want to say if it was sometime between 94 and 98.
Yeah, I was on the road with another band during most of that period of time, so I'm not sure. And that was before Angela and I got together, so I wasn't around for that. But he went to Europe with us. When I played with Stop the Truck one time.
Brian did?
For about a month, seemed like we were there.
He's such a great guy, man. I've known him since I was like 16.
I haven't seen him for a while. He was missing for a while, and I don't think anybody knew where he was. And then I'm not sure what happened with him. But, he's a nice guy.
Yeah. Yeah, I had him on the show a few years ago. Did a good talk on here. All right, so people should check out the video for Agriculture, and that is on the Music for Life.
Yes.
Yeah, YouTube and it's also page. On Reggaeville.
And it's on Reggaeville, that's
it's
right.
It's on Reggaeville's hosting it. But yeah, you can find it through our website, musicforlifemedia.com.
And that's with the four?
Yes, sir.
Hold on, just making sure I have that on here. All right. Make sure that I put that.
And Perfect Friends just came out today as a world premiere.
Oh, really?
On Top Shelf Music magazine.
Oh, fantastic, man.
Yeah, yeah.
This won't be out for a few weeks, but yeah, people should check it out. People should just check out the whole record. It's fantastic, man. Put it on. Spin it.
Spin it. Spin the dub.
Spin the dub, baby.
I like to listen to the dub when I'm in my truck going down the road. That's when I get into it.
Yeah.
Take the journey.
Do you frequent Negril when it's normally time?
When I go there, I usually stay in Negril.
Yeah.
First time I went to Jamaica, I was in Ocho Rios, but after that, I've been in Negril every time I went. And I have friends there, and there's clubs there where I can walk in and play and stuff. So it's pretty comfortable for me there.
I was in Ocho Rios for a while. It was nice for like a week.
Yeah.
But I've heard Negril is the place.
Negril is more laid back, although, you know, there's crime and stuff everywhere you go. So, you know, that's something everybody deals with. But I find Negril to be a lot more laid back. I used to live in Hawaii for many, many years, and it kind of reminds me of how it used to be in Hawaii to go to Negril now.
Okay. So, what about you, RJ? You ever go down to Jamaica, man?
I've only been five times. I would really like to go again.
Only five? Yeah. That's a lot.
Only five
times.
The first time I went to Jamaica was the time that really changed my whole life, and that was 1989. So I went to see Shabba Ranks He came down to Sunsplash on a wire, like from a wire, like a cable, like from way far away, and people just went nuts and lost their mind. And I came back to Austin, and I was doing, you know, I was doing R&B and hip hop on the station at KZI at the time, and I just said, you know, I want to do a reggae show from a Jamaican perspective. And so I changed formats then, and I've been doing that show ever since then.
That's amazing, man. I think that's so cool.
So I love Jamaica. I love the people. The last time we went down was 2017, I believe. We did a video with Philippa Don in Rosetown in Kingston.
Oh, nice.
And it was so cool. The people were all so nice and friendly. They took care, you know, they just took good care of us.
Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing.
And then we got to meet Stephen Stanley. He came to our hotel and hung out with us for a while.
That's
and told
killer.
Us a lot of stories about many different things.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I love the music, and somehow it's grabbed hold of my heart and won't let go, and I just choose to accept that's how it is, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing, man. I know this record just came out last week, but what are you guys working on now? Like
another record.
Another one? Record?
Yeah.
How far are you
sure.
in?
A couple of tracks. We got rhythm tracks.
We got three songs.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It doesn't take long for us to create. I don't know exactly why, but I just feel like there's always a song out there, and there's stuff going by your head every minute, like a river, and all you got to do is stick your hand in there and get something, and then take it and run with it, you know?
Yeah.
Like I hear stuff every day. People say stuff every day, and it's a hook, you know? Like, there's this one old gal. She was a musician, and she would always be gone late at night, and her boyfriend was one of Willie's crew. So they were always gone, you know? So they'd all get on the bus after they got through their show, and he'd call her up, and she wouldn't be there. And so they'd get in these kind of like fights about it, and she told me, he always calls me late at night, but my phone don't work under neon lights. I just went, oh, really? You know?
Yeah.
I just wrote that down right away, boy. My phone don't work under neon lights. Oh, Lord.
That's great.
So, but somebody's always saying something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's kind of where, you know, like songwriters, I mean, real ones, that's where we ain't waiting for inspiration, really.
Yeah.
I mean, because God might be busy, you know,
yeah.
and you still got to write, you know.
Yeah.
So you got to learn how to take stuff and that you see or that you hear and make it into something, you know. And the same with perfect friends. It's like someone said something about imperfect friends, and I just went, perfect friends. Wow. I ain't got no perfect friend. You know?
That's right, yeah.
It's just so true that people at the end of the song that never heard the song are singing along with it.
Right.
So that, de-ding, you know, you got that one.
Yeah. So yeah. Well, dudes, it's been really great talking to you. People can find this record, Agriculture, wherever they find music, right?
It's 190 Spotify, different outlets. Deezer, Tidal, you know.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
iTunes.
They can keep on checking in because the double vinyl is coming.
Coming.
January,
coming,
yes. Right? Yeah.
January or maybe late December.
Okay. Well, good, man. I don't know when this is going to come out. I'm taking a month off from having the actual conversation parts of the podcast because I'm coming up on 1,000 and I've never taken a break.
There
but,
you go.
Good.
But I'll have shows coming out while I'm on my break, new shows, and this will be one of them. But it's
send
been
us
great.
An email.
Yeah, definitely.
Let us
will.
Know.
Yeah, yeah. I'll let your. I'm in touch with Madison and Tyler and
yeah.
and Heather pretty regularly.
Awesome.
They're great people. But man, congratulations on this record. It's really gorgeous, man.
Thank you, Johnny, and
yeah.
we appreciate you you interviewing us. We really do.
Yeah, man,
thanks
no problem.
Thanks for the time, Johnny, and appreciate
yeah,
it.
No problem, man. Great talking to you guys.
Call us if you need us.
All right, man. Thank you. Take care.
Peace.
So come and break the time for the call. Don't tarry, never start. Righteous is the rules and it a reign of over
all. Alan Mo Montserrat, along with R.J. Johnson, his partner, they made this record, Agriculture, produced by R.J. Johnson. What a great record. You should check it out, man. 20 songs. You know, I miss new reggae music. I'm not in touch with the reggae scene. But through Alan Mo Montserrat, I think I'm going to look around, dig around, see who's putting out new reggae music. You know? Don't forget, you can check out musicforlifemedia.com. That 4 is the number. That's R.J. Johnson's thing. You can also find Alan Mo Montserrat at alanmomontserrat.com. I'll put the link in the text of this podcast, gang. You know what I'm saying? Vinyl's coming soon. I want to thank R.J. and Alan for coming on the show. It was great talking to them. Great connecting with them. Great hearing some great reggae. And hey, gang, don't forget, when you're out there checking out Agriculture on the streaming services and whatnot, you can find How Did I Get Here on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Overcast, Stitcher, all the places that you find podcasts. You can get it going. You can also ask Alexa to play it. You can ask Google to play it. They'll do it. Play the latest episode of How Did I Get Here. That's the command. All right? New shows every Tuesday and every Friday. Have a great, great day, whatever it is you're doing. Enjoy the rest of this song, No Mistakes, from this amazing album, Agriculture, by Alan Mo Montserrat. Let's get down.
The father never been wrong yet, this I could say. Oh, never rap, oh, never take, oh, never play. La, 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 la.
God never make mistakes. We call your name. I never call a wrong number.
I never call a wrong number. I never make no mistake.